Hello everyone and welcome to a new episode of the Inference Podcast. I'm your host, Michele, and today I'm incredibly happy to have here with me the CEO and co-founder of Graph CMS, Michael. I can't remember how should I pronounce your name, actually.
Michael is perfect. Hey everyone.
Hey. Okay, so how are you, Michael?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm really fine, thank you. I've been waiting for this episode for a very long time because I'm really passionate about your product, so that's why I've invited you to join the episode, because I have some questions, actually. Mm-hmm. So maybe it's the right time for discuss some things that I'd like to talk about, and also make other people to, you know, get closer to Graph CMS, because I personally believe it's something that it's worth exploring for personal projects or also for big projects at large scale in big companies. So Absolutely. It's definitely interesting.
Thanks for having me. Happy to be here.
Yeah, no, thank you for joining. So I would like to ask you first question. How was the idea of Graph CMS born? And which is the problem that you are trying to solve that other headless CMS are not solving today?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So the idea actually dates back to 2016. I was already working with my co-founder and our CTO, Daniel, over at Graph CMS on another project, in a similar space. We were working on a prototype for a digital asset management system. But then really early 2016, I think it was March, April, I was stumbling upon a blog post on CSS tricks by Chris Coyer, and I'm pretty sure a lot of developers out there they know the platform CSS Tricks and all of the content that Chris Coyer provided for the community. Thanks for that, of course. the blog post was, what is a headless content management system? And I really randomly stumbled upon it on my Twitter feed. I didn't know what it was back then. And it was only a two-pager, the blog post. It was a very short post describing what is a headless CMS, what does it make different to a web content management system, and why should you care, actually? And I read the post and I thought, wow, that's really cool. It was the time like all the mobile ecosystems were exploding, and basically Graph CMS is a headless content management system also. And what that means is it helps you distributing content and the content that is maintained within the CMS into multiple channels. So not just websites, mobile applications, think of smart TV applications, voice application, any kind of channel you can imagine, a headless CMS helps you distributing and managing and distributing content to those points. So I also refer to it as it helps you building a sustainable content strategy, because whatever comes next in terms of content consumption devices, maybe virtual reality will become the next thing, then the CMS, the content is already stored there, and the CMS will help you getting and integrating this content onto the platform. So I told Daniel about the idea. He was buying it, like me, and the next day we started building it. That's how it all gets started. Where we are different to other CMSs, initially, also, we were the first GraphQL native headless CMS in the market, because when I was reading the blog post back then, GraphQL was just released and open sourced a couple of months ago. We were already using it in our other prototype we were building for the other product, and we totally loved it. And we thought, okay, if headless CMS is becoming the next big thing in the CMS space, and GraphQL is becoming the next big thing in APIs, then let's add those two concepts together and build the first GraphQL native headless content management system. And we did, and until today, the GraphQL portion is one of the main differentiators of our system, because the developer experience is really superb. We invest a lot in how the APIs are designed, how they perform, what can they do for you, the functionality, how flexible is the API itself. A lot of CMS vendors out there also now are catching up on the GraphQL API of things, but basically, for most it's marketing. They can tell we have GraphQL API. If you look under the hood, what the API can do for you, how does it perform, then we're talking different dimensions here, and this is where we differ. On the other hand, what we do different than other headless CMS providers is what we call a content federation. We want to help. We want to help businesses and developers to really unify all of their data sources, all of their content they have, because in a lot of cases, in a lot of companies or enterprises, data is really stored in multiple data stores or even tools. And the typical enterprise stack, you would have a CMS, maybe there's an e-commerce portion to the product you're building. So there's some e-commerce tools like Shopify or commerce tools or commerce layer. There's relevant data. Maybe there's an SAP or fulfillment there. Maybe there's some legacy APIs that are still storing relevant data to your business. And getting all of this data into your application can be quite the challenge. So integrating the APIs. And what we allow with Graph CMS nowadays, the content federation topic, is an easy approach to unify all of those data sources into one universal API. So the developers then implementing the applications on the front end only need to work with this one universal API. So it's really a superb developer experience connecting those data points.
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, you hit some different points. First of all, as you said at the beginning, you've been like one of the first native CMS with GraphQL support of the, out of the box. So that means that you have a certain expertise in that field, both in headless CMS and GraphQL, which, you know, I don't know. As a developer, I just trust you because of your expertise level at this point. So that's a great point. And also, you mentioned virtual reality, e-commerces, or whatever, because you basically can do whatever you want. Mobile APIs and hybrid APIs between, you know, mobile and desktop. So what's the main domain of interest for Graph CMS at this point?
So what we've seen in terms of domains, in terms of verticals or industries, it's really mixed. So any sort of industry vertical, be it e-commerce, be it insurance, be it finance, be it media, there's a need for, in all of those verticals for a system like this, for a headless CMS, and there's also the need for this unification aspect to combine all the services. So it's really vertical agnostic, I would say. But what our focus is and how we designed Graph CMS is that we really want to allow it to be as a content backend, a content back content engine for not just marketing stack development, so not just websites for marketing cases, no, but also for product use cases. We want to be the content engine, the content layer in digital product development, which means it has to be very reliable. Like you can think of we have one large customer. It's a telco from the Nordics. They're building a video on demand streaming platform based on Graph CMS. So it's not like they build a website. Really, the whole product relies on our backend service for all of this structured data on actors, on series, on movies, all this metadata you would have in a video on demand streaming platform. So this is where we really shine. We want to be part of the mission. We want to really sitting there in a mission critical stack and be a reliable partner.
Okay, that's really, really interesting, actually, because I've seen many, for example, your marketing division is doing an amazing job in exploring many different domains, such as e-commerce and, of course, you know, content publishing and all the other domains. So I that was a personal, you know, curiosity to understand where you were focusing most, and that definitely solves my question. One thing I'd like to ask you, given that you have to manage a lot of data, and as you said at the beginning, Graph CMS actually can use many different sources of data. So how do you actually manage that data inside Graph CMS? Do you have like a graphical user interface that can be accessible for non-technical people? Would you like to say something about that?
So the content that is stored within our data store, that is all very nicely manageable via user interface. So you can edit and maintain the content there. But when getting the content out of other data sources, let's say like a PIM, like a product inventory or product information management system, we don't have the UI yet to display the data also from the other sources. What you can do right now with Content Federation is make connections on the API level, so that that you can, for example, maintain a reference of the entry that is stored within the PIM, maintain the reference in Graph CMS, and then join these data points across multiple systems on the API. So when making the GraphQL request to Graph CMS, you can ask for the fields for, let's say, the product model in Graph CMS, but also for the other fields that are represented in the PIM, so that you get this one API accessing both systems. What you can do then is a feature that we also have recently released is the UI extensions. If you like, and if there's a need for it, you can just, for this API extension that you have developed with the Content Federation, you can develop a UI component within the Graph CMS interface to also interact on that data. But other than that, usually you would deliver that data from the CMS and the PIM if it is needed in your application just via the API.
Okay, great. Thank you. So you actually took a point on PIM, which is a kind of keyword I would like to explore a bit more. And that's because in the past I've been working with e-commerces and news websites where we were using certain, let's say, bad CMS, but we needed to use them because of their PIM capabilities. So I would like you, because, you know, maybe people are using bad CMSs because they need it, but they don't know that there's a better alternative out there. So I would like to to explain what a PIM is.
So a PIM is basically a product in inventory management system or a product information management system. And it was it's really good to design and model a whole set of products, the whole product inventory and all the variations that come with that product. Usually one product has multiple variations. You know, just recently the new MacBooks finally got released and there's the M1 Pro CPU, but there's also the variation of the M1 Max CPU. But it's the same product at the end of the day, but different constellations. And PIM is really good in managing those structures of variations. However, you can model all of this in headless CMS also. If you look at the content modeling, Graph CMS supports for very strong content structuring and relational modeling. So you could actually also, we have customers that use Graph CMS as their PIM because they also want to use their PIM sort of headless. And the household names in PIM, most of them or some of them are also from the old world, so they're not even headless. You don't get nice API for it, but the data, they want to integrate it somewhere else. So with one customer, it's a large food and beverage manufacturer in Germany. What they actually do, their content strategy is based on a huge database of recipes. And recipes also have a lot of variations in them. So what they did before, or they still do, they have those recipes into the PIM, and it's there. It's working good for them actually. So they don't want, they're looking for a headless CMS, but they want to keep their recipe database there because it's working. People know how to work with it. So what they now do to combine the new efforts of the CMS and the new content they develop in the CMS while maintaining the recipes, they also use Content Federation to merge and to unify really those two data sources into one API. So just the front-end teams, they just have to issue queries to the Graph CMS API to get data of both.
Okay, that's awesome. You already talked about a lot of stuff, so I can only imagine the complexity of such a large infrastructure and architecture. And that's where I'd like to lead the conversation right now. If you want to tell something about the behind the scenes of Graph CMS, technology used, some architectural approaches, something that, you know, for a nerd like me can be interesting.
Yes, happy to. And And you would also find out, and maybe a tip on the sideline, if anyone is interested, sort of in the stack of a company is being used, like a good hint is always to check out the jobs pages, what requirements those roles are coming with. You'll find out a lot about the stack. So in our job positions, we would usually ask for both TypeScript know-how and Golang. So we use both. Parts of the stack is based on TypeScript, so Node.js based stack, and part of the stack is based on Golang, so the mission critical part, the part that has to be really performant on the API layers implemented in Golang. On the database side of things, we're always reevaluating. We tried a lot of different data stores, and we still continue to try. We are always evaluating new and improvements. For us, Postgres just works best, and we have the feeling that by far we're not at the end of the capabilities of Postgres, and it's such a fantastic and reliable database. So it's really underneath, it's Postgres, and then everything else implemented on top in Node and Golang.
Okay, that's interesting. And talking about databases, I would like to ask you a question. As for now, when I do create a schema and insert data, mm-hmm. I do actually insert everything on your databases, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is right. So we host everything, we store everything. The data ownership and the content ownership is clearly defined. So they're always the person or the company that stores the data, the whole content and data belongs to the person. From that perspective, we take care of the hosting. We make sure that everything runs reliable, is up 24/7, and scales, so it's performant. But data ownership and data protection is, of course, a serious topic. Therefore, so in our model, the data is owned by the person creating the content, fully owned. And for larger companies that want a bit more. More of a layer of protection is we host dedicated infrastructure for that enterprise or larger business. So we replicate the whole infrastructure in an isolated way from other customers so that we can guarantee, okay, on this infrastructure, there's only the data of that one customer being maintained and the APIs only work with request to that endpoint of that customer. So it means they cannot be any noisy neighbor effects because if you build a SaaS application, usually you would opt in for a multi-tenant approach. And we do have shared infrastructure. So for example, if you use the product for free, you select one of the free regions. We offer 5 on the planet, so EU, US, we have Asia, we have also coverage, and then the data is stored there, but with several thousands of other tenants. And in computing, it can happen that if one customer puts a lot more strain on the API, that other customers, other tenants can suffer from this. Now, we build a lot, we invest a lot of thoughts and time into preventing such effects. But if you want to scale really big, we recommend going for a dedicated infrastructure approach.
Yeah, absolutely. That makes completely sense. Going back a bit on the technical behind the scenes, I would like to ask you insider question. What was the biggest challenge in organizing such a complex and large infrastructure architectural decisions that were really tough? Do you have something to share?
They're always tough. So if you start off with your startup and you're a team, maybe we were the two of us, Daniel and me, we wanted to go fast, like trying to implement everything yourself. Is really hard at that point, resource-wise. You want to deliver a result. You don't want to build utilities and whatnot. And so early on, we opted in actually for a GraphQL engine that was not developed by us. So initially, we teamed up with GraphQL, nowadays Prisma, to use their GraphQL engine to basically run all of the GraphQL APIs that are being defined, and we would add our flavor to it. We would extend.
Okay.
A few years in later, we found out, okay, like it doesn't work really out for us anymore. The maintenance and the scalability got harder and harder, because their design decisions on this GraphQL engine, how they designed it, not necessarily would work with the model and how we would serve APIs. Maybe it would scale if it would be one tenant serving billions of requests on that API, but maybe not thousands of tenants only having few APIs calls, or maybe just 1,000, but it's a different model of how things need to be designed. So at some point, like 2 or 3 years in, we decided to re-implement everything ourselves on the GraphQL engine. That this is when we introduced Golang to the stack, actually. And of course, it's painful to do such a decision after you're running. The first customers are there, they're paying, and you want to focus on adding business value instead of rewriting your core. And that took almost a year, but in hindsight, it paid off so much. We could cut down. We had a heavy benchmark. We had one customer with a gigantic schema, GraphQL schema. It was about 5 megabytes in just schema file.
Wow.
So that is hundreds of thousands of lines of schema.
Yeah.
And that thing needed to be parsed and on every request and whatnot. And we had, they had performance problems at some point. Caching would help if the requests are cached, but if they're not cached, then such requests could take up to 13 seconds, which is not acceptable.
Yeah.
It's not the user experience you would want if a request takes like this. And after a rewrite, we could get a request like this down to the 100 to 200 millisecond range, which was very fast for the complexity of that schema. Okay. Ideally, you want to run everything below 100 milliseconds. That's how your user interface should also respond, to have a snappy and great experience. And that additional layer of performance, of course, we get with caching. So all of the requests are cached on a global CDN, so on edge CDN.
Okay, given that I'm a big programming languages nerd, I would like to ask you if you can share, of course. You told me you started with GraphQL and then Prisma, which is based on TypeScript and JavaScript. Mm-hmm. So Golang, of course, makes sense as, you know, if you want something more performant. But why Golang and not something like, for example, Java, Rust, or other languages?
It was... So at that time, we made the decision that the developer team was still just a handful of people. It was less than 10 people. We decided on what we need from the language, so performance and really strong concurrency. Golang had it, and we had already some people in the team had a little Golang knowledge, but none of us were expert. But we decided on, okay, we can do it a little bit. And Golang is a language. I haven't written a line of Golang in my life, unfortunately. So I haven't coded for a while. If I would start to code again, I would love to try it and get into Golang. But apparently, it's a very easy to learn language. There's it's only a limited number of constructs within Golang, so you can learn it very fast if you have the basic understanding of programming languages. You know what's operators, what's the type system, whatsoever. Then you can get it really fast, because I think I'm not so deep into all of the Golang ecosystem, but I think they picked, when designing Golang, the constructs that are battle proven from other programming languages and mix them in a very performant manner.
Yeah, and the fact that a team with little experience in Golang was able to replicate, of course,
yeah,
leading to the results you wanted for, you were creating something that wasn't general purpose. You were creating something that needed to solve a specific issue for Graph CMS.
Yes.
But the fact that a team could replicate what Prisma was doing, it's impressive on one hand. And on the other hand, it's telling me something about the culture of the company. Because, of course, the company allowed that kind of change. you know, made a strong decision at this point. So it's really inspiring and tells something good about the company culture. Would you like to expand on this topic?
I mean, at some point you have to. Initially, you make decisions, you take technical debt for the sake of going fast to market, to validate your ideas, to eventually have a prototype, have the first customers onboarded so you can go out and raise some VC money if this is the track you want to go. And going fast and taking those dependencies, that was a good decision initially, but at some point you need to see, okay, when is the time to do that? Because the longer you stay with a system that is holding you back in terms of performance, scalability, and also maintainability, because it was harder and harder to add features that we needed on a core that we didn't own, so we had to, it became hacky. So
yeah,
to have a cleaner cut means sometimes, okay, you slow down for 6 to 12 months, but what you gain afterwards is an acceleration. There's some sort of return on invest on this. It takes a bit of time, but I'm happy it paid off.
Okay, that's awesome. So I would like to move the conversation to another topic I've seen on the price ranges, because at a certain point I've noticed automatic AI translations. Mm-hmm. So what does it mean?
That one is a feature on the roadmap.
Yeah.
I hope we can soon get to it to finalize it. Localization is a big topic in content management. Very often you have or want to translate your content into different languages and serve your website or product in different languages. And very often this is a manual process, so some people translate it, or they use at least a translation management system to professionalize the process of translations a little bit. Nowadays, AI translation algorithms or systems became so good that we want to integrate those APIs into the workflow in the CMS, so that if you have a text body, let's say you have a blog post or any sort of product description, you only hit one button and we talk underneath with the API of the translation provider, like DeepL is a great engine. It's based on AI and machine learning, but the results are stunning. It's really amazing. So that can really speed up the process of then translating all the content, and not just in one language or two, but all the languages this system supports. So with a click, you can localize, you can roll out. If you have designed your, for example, website structure in a CMS so that everything is localizable, then with a click, you could roll out in maybe 50 or 60 languages at once.
Wow, that's incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we basically talked about the origins of GraphCMS. We talked about the expertise, the company culture, and the technical background, of course, of the company. Mm-hmm. And now we also talked about a little part of the future of the company, where it's going mm-hmm. with new groundbreaking features. That drives me to the conclusion of the episode, where I would like to ask you, do you have any plan for the future that you'd like to share with me?
We have many plans, actually. So recently we have raised our Series A round. We have increased our budget. Basically, we're scaling up the company. I think beginning of the year we were 25 people. Now we are around 50. And okay. Continuing to grow to 60 people by end of the year, and the growth will continue in the next year. We are tackling a lot. So we want to push the CMS industry, the headless CMS industry, into the next level, the evolution step of where we see that in modern data architectures, data is not only coming from one single source, but multiple single sources. And we want to help unifying those sources into one great developer experience, into one API that is easily consumable, hosted, secure, fast, cached, and that is a lot of work. So we're extending our team.
Okay, so you are extending your team. So I guess you mm-hmm. are hiring right now
across the board. So we're looking for engineering roles, but also on the product management and product design side of things. So we scaled up from actually two product teams, or it was actually one product team consisting of a front-end and back-end team. We are scaling up to 6 to 7 teams. So we work on different streams based on different objectives, like either improving the developer experience, improving the content creator experience. There's one team dedicated then to exactly that, to move faster in that direction, but also on the commercial side. So of course we're hiring in sales and growth and marketing, developer relations. So we like to produce a lot of content and to educate on what we do, on technical content. So if you're interested working for a tech company like GraphCMS, please reach out.
Okay, that's awesome. So thank you again for being here. It has been a great pleasure to talk with you. And I really hope to... Oh yeah, I got a little spoiler. So for everyone listening to the podcast or watching the YouTube episode, you better pre-order my book, because there's a chapter on GraphCMS where we will be talking.
I
don't know. Yeah, I don't know if you knew it, but I have a little chapter where I talk about GraphCMS, because, of course, in my experience, it's probably one of the best headless CMS for GraphQL and also for non-technical people, because that's where the paradigm is shifting. I know many CMS where the non-technical people is getting lost, but GraphCMS is definitely not one of those. So thank you again for driving that company in that direction. Thank you for being my guest for this episode, and I really hope to see you again maybe in the future.
Thank you, Michele.
Thank you. So that was all for today. Hope to see you again to the next episode. Goodbye. Bye, Michael.
Bye. Ciao.
Auf Wiedersehen. I think
Auf Wiedersehen.
Okay. I tried.